Encore with Claire O'Brien. Arts and entertainment for the Midlands. With the Dean Crow Theatre and Arts Centre Athlone. Imagine the possibilities. DeanCrowTheatre.com.
Stradbally Artists Exhibition. Incredible work from some new and some more mature artists, each with their own style and story. So this is Christmas, in case you hadn't noticed, and that is the name of a new film from Port Arlington filmmaker Ken Wardrop, and a new novel set in the States from a writer with Offaly heritage. Frances Browner discusses A Bronx Summer. You're listening to Encore on Midlands 103, your dedicated arts show. I'm Claire O'Brien, and you can drop me a line to tonight on the show to 083 3010 103. The Lamb Brothers Midlands 103 text line is always open for you, and Encore at midlands103.com. Lots of different stories, as you heard on the programme a little bit later on. But before we do that, I want to let you know that Birr Stage Guild is presenting some seasonal songs and Christmas carols with Birr Stage Guild's chorus. How wonderful will that be? Soloists and the incomparable John Molloy. And that is happening tomorrow night and on Saturday, which is the 8th and the 9th of December. How quickly has that come around that we're in almost the middle of December already? So that is, for me, really, the perfect cue for a piece of music that is perfectly made for a superb choir. And it is composed by the Ukrainian composer Mykola Leontov, but it was arranged in the 90s by John Williams and has been interpreted over the years by many different choirs and performers. John Williams redid it for Home Alone, and this is what it sounds like. It's just so fabulous, isn't it? After the break here on Encore on Midlands 103, I'm really looking forward to speaking to filmmaker Ken Wardrop. His film, and it's playing across the country at the moment, his most recent film is called So This Is Christmas, and I'm going to play you part of the trailer because I think that is really what will give you a sense of what the story is about before we talk to Ken. It brings the Christmas experiences of five ordinary people, as Ken so wonderfully does. And this is a little bit of what you can expect.
Midlands 103's Encore with the Dean Crow Theatre and Arts Centre Athlone. Live theatre, drama, dance, music, comedy, musical theatre, panto. Your home of entertainment for all. DeanCrowTheatre.com.
You're listening to Encore on Midlands 103, and still to come, we will be talking to writer Frances Browner and to Margaret Devoy of the Stradbally Artists Group. But before that, we kind of think we've heard all of the Christmas stories, and then something comes around and you realise you haven't quite heard them all, and you haven't seen the way Christmas, the reality of Christmas is for some people. But no better man than Ken Wardrop to take us into those lives. Just before the break there, we had the trailer for So This Is Christmas. And the stories are set in late November all across the country. Expectations for a jolly Christmas. We're doing all the bits and pieces that we do. But for five people, life is maybe not all the tinsel and the fairy lights that many of us associate with Christmas. Ken Wardrop, you're very welcome to Encore.
Thanks so much. Lovely to be joining you this evening.
And lovely to be chatting to you. I'm really looking forward to seeing this in Dunamace tomorrow evening because it's playing there on the big screen. Tell us the story of So This Is Christmas. What inspired you to tell this particular story? And then where did you find the five storytellers?
Yeah, well, it goes back quite a long way, really. When I was a kid, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, passed away while she was staying with us on Christmas Day. I was 12 years of age, and that had a big impact on all our lives, really, for the next few Christmases. As you could imagine, it was really an occasion that became about marking Granny's anniversary as opposed to the celebrations that go around Christmas. And I guess as a 12-year-old, that kind of sticks with you because it's, you know, my younger brother, I suppose it would be even more challenging for him. But one of my recollections then of Christmas Day was Mum burying her head. She used to always dry the clothes over the aga, and she'd bury her head in there and she'd be crying. And, you know, as a kid, that would break your heart. And obviously we'd remember Gran too, but not in the same way as Mum would have. And I suppose that just put a little bit of a dark cloud over Christmas for us for a few years. And then as a filmmaker, you're always looking around in the world for ideas. And Christmas has stayed with me for, and that side of Christmas, the darkness, I suppose, you know, just like any other family, you kind of, Christmas throws up problems. And
it
invariably,
yes,
the odd Christmas argument stands out in my recollection and all this. And then two Christmases, I happened to be away from home, and I sort of enjoyed it. I sort of enjoyed the fact that there wasn't as much.
Heresy.
And I don't mean that. Yeah, I don't mean about the family thing, but it was almost, you know, I say we've lost the war to commercialization. You know, it's won out. You know, the Irish, we've embraced the Americanization and all of that of the Christmas. I get it. There's no going back from that. But I kind of didn't miss it when I didn't have it in my life, too. Anyway, so long story short, I said to my producer, I'm thinking about making a bit of a Christmas film. Told him the idea, you know, that my own Christmas had been damaged. And then another little factor in the story came, another person I know who would put extreme expectations on herself to have the perfect Christmas for her and the two boys. And she was a single mom and, you know, struggling financially in all sorts. And I just felt like I compared her to my best pal, who is a Norwegian woman, and she has four girls, and she starts in October to knit them their presents, and they don't, that's what they expect at Christmas, is something that a mom has knitted, and she's very well off, and, you know, well able to buy the expensive presents if she so wanted, but for them, Christmas was about what mom was making them. And that's just something that I was like comparing and contrasting all the time, and saying, what's it all about? Anyway, long story short, the reality is the producer just heard Christmas film and thought, oh, ching, ching, this'll go on forever. And we might, if we had a Christmas hit, who knows. But needless to say with a documentary, they tend to be all quite low budget and independent.
Yeah.
And this film then, when we set sail, you know, I didn't actually know the impact it would have on me personally as I discovered these stories. And we were very fortunate. I know you asked how we found these people. So we found five people. They came courtesy of working with two wonderful researchers, Anne-Marie Fitzgerald, who's actually from Monastrevin, so not far away from where I'm based in Port Arlington, or where I grew up, should I say. And then Pam Finn, who's based out in near Tuam in Galway.
Yeah.
And I always tell people to cast net wide. So we go to the kind of very top of the pyramid. So we talk to organizations and charities that are working with people that may be in difficulty or struggling in the lead up to Christmas. And invariably, that is a complicated one in order to really, because of all the various, you know, obviously rigmaroles that you have to go through to access. But having said that, while dealing with all the organizations, you're gaining loads of information and important details as to how you might go about, you know, sharing one of these stories. Mm-hmm. If you, so then we get on the ground and we go walkabout and we go on Facebook and reach out to the people we know, and they'll spread the news, obviously. And I think Anne-Marie, for example, she walks Port Leash in and out of the different shops, and Mountmellick, because I know I went down to Mountmellick myself and did some of the shops and the pubs and so on, and just chatted to people and discussed real lives and what was going on, and how Christmas may be challenging for them in the year that was, and that would have been last Christmas, of course. So we had a quick enough turnaround for a film to have it out this year. So anyway, so we have five wonderful characters from various walks of life, and we have a young dad who's sadly, Jason, who's from Abbey Leaks, who sadly lost his wife Roxy the February beforehand. So it was going to be a particularly tough Christmas for his family. And that one of the stories, as you can imagine, was very complicated and difficult. And, you know, we had to get to know each other, myself and Jason, very well before we'd commit. And Jason needed to trust where I would take the story and my understanding and sensibility. You know, we needed to be on the same page. So thankfully, I think we met three times in total. And also Jason had seen a previous film I'd made about the older people cocooning during lockdown. So he sort of got it and got me as a filmmaker. So fortunately, he let us into his world and little boy's world, and our crew shared in that. And it's particularly tough, that story, as you can imagine. We were with them on Christmas Eve and we said goodbye. I think it got dark and the kids were going to bed, and we were on the way back to our own worlds where things were a little bit easier. And it just was, made our own Christmases, I think, quite complicated, to say the least, too. Anyway, Jason is only one of five, and as I said, there's many other stories in the mix there. That sounds all very heavy. Now, there's lots of humor. Yes, there are lots of light moments and lots of humor. And as you could imagine, with Christmas, it throws up lots of different subjects to consider and so on. So there is lots of fun in amongst what is a complicated film too.
Yeah, the opening of the trailer there, I thought really captured a lot of captured so much. You have the priest standing on the altar and he's ringing the phone and he's speaking to Santa and he says all the boys and girls are ready. You don't know that if you're listening to the trailer, but if you see it, obviously that's clear to you. But what you also see is probably one class of teenagers sitting in the front three or four rows of an oratory in a school or a small church somewhere, and the rest of the building is echoing in silence, and it kind of tells its own story in just that little vignette, doesn't it?
Yeah, and these vignettes are featured throughout the film, because I actually had created this, I call them my Advent scenes, that kind of are junctions between all the different stories. And they're the kind of frivolous things that go on around Christmas that we're all familiar with the turkeys and the Christmas cake decorations and the, you know, and they kind of add a little bit of the magic and the spontaneous sort of, color to the piece. And we had a lot of fun, and I call it a creative documentary because some of these scenes are constructed.
Yes.
You know, it's not fly in the wall documentary. These scenes are like we were shooting on 35mm film, so we were moving a big camera about the place and angling it, so you couldn't just run around aimlessly with the camera, you know.
Yeah.
So everything was shot very meticulously and each frame was really well considered. Actually, Narian Van Meel is the photographer, chap from Westport direction. He did an amazing job.
That's a real Westport name.
Yeah, it is. Indeed. And then he did a wonderful job. And then Emer Noon from Galway, well-known composer. I think she's the first female conductor of the orchestra in the Oscars. She did the music score. She's a wonderful Irish composer based out of Galway. Mm-hmm. And I wrote her a random email. Emer didn't really know me. And I just wrote her a chancy email saying, Emer, any chance you'd look at this film and consider composing it for me? And, you know, I think she's a very busy lady, but anyway, she said, I think she was in an airport and she just stuck it on and just said, I'll give this 5 minutes. And of course she watched it through and just rang back and just was like, I want to get on board this project. So that was it was a real gift, to be honest. Her music has elevated it, you know, into a different space. And we're so privileged that she agreed to do the project, and you know, I think it really adds some magic to it for sure.
So
it's been a real journey, as you can imagine. All films always tend to be, because they take forever. I call it like running 30 marathons back to back in order to get to the finishing line.
And after making a film like this, I mean, there's obviously the emotional journey that you go on as the filmmaker, but there's the emotional journey that you have in mind for the viewer, for the audience. I almost had a heart attack when I saw the turkey plucking, because it gave me a flashback to being a kid, plucking turkeys in my grandparents. I don't think I've ever quite gotten over that. So I did have a moment.
I know, I had the same, my mother going around. Yeah,
you'll never forget that, my aunts. But what's the emotional impact that you want the audience to take away with them from this?
That's always a good question. I'm not sure what, you know, I obviously am getting feedback what audiences are getting from it. And when I put it together, I just wanted to share these stories just to throw light on the fact that not everybody's Christmas is and that great. And actually, if we all just acknowledge that, it's kind of a bit easier, because if we're sitting alone or, you know, in a bad way come Christmas Day, you know, I think we might take a little bit of solace that there are other people having the same experience as us, that it's not all what you see on the TV or Instagram, that the realities behind windows can be quite different. And just to know you're not alone in that scenario, I think is important. And if nothing else, that would be make me feel like I've done an okay job with this. Also, I think from the people that were in the film, I think, you know, I hope they found it a cathartic experience to share their stories as best they could. And, you know, so I think I'm always conscious of being respectful of the participants, and you know, I understand that it is a responsibility and a privilege. Mm-hmm. To bring their stories. So I think I never try to do too much in the way of answering questions when in films. I kind of propose them and let audience take away from the film what they make of it. And I certainly have been getting lots of responses in, you know, that are making people sit up and think about that time of year a little bit more. You know, I think, to be honest, Jason, and it's from his, so I wouldn't say it's my intentions from the film, but it comes from Jason, where he says, he talks about gifts at Christmas, but the greatest gift of all is time. And I think that's in the context of, you know, his experiences with Roxy and the fact that he didn't have time at Christmas anymore to spend with Roxy. And if we had something that we all have that is available to gift someone, is time. So that, you know, on Christmas to remember our older neighbors and relatives and friends that may not have the same amount of people around them. I mean, that's something that I hope comes out of the film. It certainly is something I've taken away from the experience myself. And yeah, so I think, as I said, I don't want to take that on board as what I did with the film, because that comes from Jason, from his own rep, but it's something that I took away from it, and I know Wonderful. Other people have as well.
Ken, thank you so much for talking to us. That is director Ken Wardrop. The film is So This Is Christmas. It was released last month. It is playing in cinemas. It's on in the Dunamase Theatre in Portlaoise tomorrow night. You can get tickets for that. And I think there are those five characters are people we're all going to fall a little bit in love with over the next little while as we get to know them. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be going to Stradbally to hear about an exhibition happening in the library there. Stay with us.
Encore on Midlands 103, your arts and entertainment for the Midlands, with the Dean Crow Theatre and Arts Centre Athlone. Imagine the possibilities. DeanCrowTheatre.com.
Still to come on Encore this evening, Frances Browner will tell us the story of her debut novel, A Bronx Summer. But before that, I have been chatting to Margaret Devoy of Stradbally Painters Group. They have their exhibition currently on view in the library in Stradbally, and she's been telling me a little bit about it, taking me on a virtual tour, so to speak, to start with.
When you come in, it's just like an open area and a lovely long glass corridor, and they do hang paintings there, but for our exhibition, they're actually down in the main hall. So it's a lovely open glass. The whole place is all glass, so you have lovely light and heat and everything in there. So all of our paintings are, there are nine of us in the group, and we have two paintings each hung in the gallery, in the main part of the gallery at the moment.
So tell me maybe a little bit, first of all, about your own work. You started in November 2020, in November 2021 with the Stradbally Painters.
Yeah, well, the group started up initially in 2021 with Leash Connects. They were trying to encourage people out of their COVID cocoon. And it was restricted to just six initially. But then our wonderful librarians, Niamh Boyce and Julie Sheed, started looking for funding from the Creative Ireland and LOETB and Leash Libraries for art tutors for us. So we would have had a few art tutors like Billy Dollard and Orlan McDonough, Angela Delaney, Ashley Hennessy and Caroline King came in, and they did classes with us in a series maybe of between four and three. But they quickly decided that to combat COVID isolation, that they would stay running the, we started running the Wednesday art sessions. So it was just drop in, come in whenever you felt like it. She'd have the heating on, the classical music on, and the kettle on, and the tables lined, and you just came in with your art stuff, and you started painting. And we were very lucky. We had a couple of people who were more experienced, you know, artists, and they were just continuing their own home practice, whereas for some people it was just picking up a paintbrush since a negative experience in school, you know. And they gave of their time and their expertise to us, and, you know, we were very grateful to them. And to the ladies from the library, they were so good to keep it going. Every Wednesday without fail at 10:30, we landed in. And it became a very cohesive group. And then a chance remark one day saying, oh, my God, we have such a beautiful gallery here. Wouldn't it be lovely to take advantage of it? And the next week we went in and he said, oh, by the way, I have booked a space for you for an exhibition in November. So it all kicked off from there. The library got behind us, and the arts, she got in contact with the arts office. So Maureen and Jennifer there and Anne-Marie, they started advising us as well. And they actually framed all our paintings for us. And then Bernie Horn from Leash Libraries, she funded two artists, Ashton Hennessy and Paul Angeen, to help us prep for the exhibition, and to Ashton then curated it and hung her exhibition for us. So we had a lot of help. We had a lot of help and encouragement from them.
Yeah, it sounds. It sounds like it's been a wonderful journey and a very well-supported journey for you and the other eight since November 2021 or before.
Oh, it has been. And I mean, Gillian Cunningham from the LOETB couldn't do enough for us either in terms of getting us classes set up and keeping it going, you know. It's been brilliant. It was just such... our local libraries are... They're not giving enough... praise at all for what they do for our communities, you know.
They're here. Fantastic. Tell me a little bit about your own work and your own creative journey since November 2021. Yes, you indeed, as an artist with work hanging in the gallery.
I would have always picked up a pencil and you know, just drawn a few pictures for kids. I work with children with special needs for over 20 years. So art would have been part and parcel of what we would do, and I can do arts and crafts along with the best of them, but I was always afraid to pick up a paintbrush, you know. So I took the bull by the horns when I retired, and I had to retire early. So my first class was with Billy Dollard, and I went in with nothing in my hand even. I had nothing. So Billy set me up with a few bits and pieces, and that's where it started. And it has been a revelation to me, painting. I mean, you just lose yourself in it, in the shapes and the colours. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. And we have had so much encouragement from others in the class who would be more experienced than us, giving us their tips, giving loads of their time and experience to us, particularly our legend, Christy Morn. Christy would have helped us along the way too, to choose what paintings went into this. So he would have given us a lot of... and I call him a legend because to us he is.
How would I recognise your work on the walls, Margaret?
My work itself, it's called Single Dreaming 1 and 2. It's views that I took from the Dingle Peninsula, looking out over the Slay Head. There's one with a curragh, and it turned upside down, and just a little hillock behind it, and then the second one is taken where I was lying on the hillock looking out further to see. So there are my two.
And your group has a variety of experiences and life experience as well as creative experiences behind it, doesn't it?
They surely have. There's a good few who would be much more experienced with painting. Some would have exhibited before. There's at least four of us who would have had pieces in exhibitions before. And then the rest of us, this would be our first, you know? The other five, I suppose, would be our first.
When we were chatting earlier, you were telling me about one particularly interesting experience. His story is extraordinary, isn't it? His creative journey is extraordinary. There's two very unusual, very different and very similar pieces of work from him in the exhibition.
There are. Christie originally was, his whole life he was a stonemason, and his particular art was Celtic crosses. And when he retired, he started to paint. He had his own little studio and he was painting away. But as a result of injuries from his previous career, Christie lost his right arm. But that didn't stop him. He started painting with his left arm, his left hand. And he honed his craft again. And he now has two pieces hanging in the exhibition. One he painted with his right and the other with his left. Extraordinary man.
Seems to be.
Extraordinary.
Yeah. And with all that support from outside the group and inside the group, it sounds like it's a place where artists are really well, really fostered.
It's amazing because, you know, you're sitting there in front of painting the canvas. And I remember sitting there and one of our tutors said to us, you know, if you go into art shop and say you're an artist, you will get discount on that on your pieces because it can be quite expensive. And we looked at her and said, what, can we go in and say we're artists? And she looked at us and said, and who painted that in front of you there? I mean, who, did someone drop that there? You know, it's just as simple as that. And they give you get so much support and so much encouragement. It really builds your self-confidence, you know, and your confidence in what you're doing. It makes, and they push you out of your little comfort zone. Okay, you've worked on this size canvas now. Maybe you'll move on to the next size, you know. Push yourself out there. No, try a different medium now. No, we're going to use this, you know, something different now, you know. And it's just, it's wonderful. It's empowering.
Empowering indeed, isn't it? It sounds like it's been a fabulous journey over the last 2.5 years for all of those involved in Stradbally Painters Artists Group. And that work is available to see in the library in Stradbally until the 14th of December during library hours. 18 pieces of work by 9 artists. I'm very curious about Christie's two pieces. You know, we hear so much about the difference between the left brain and the right brain, the left hand, the right hand. Really curious to see what those pieces are like. Well done to everybody involved. And as I said, the 14th of December is the final date that you can catch up with that work. We're going to take a quick break. And after that, we'll be hearing from Frances Browner, a writer and a teacher of creative writing, about her first novel. Stay with us.
Encore, brought to you by the Dean Crowe Theatre and Arts Centre Athlone. From the greatest gigs to the best community shows, enjoy it all in the comfort of our newly refurbished theatre. Your theatre, our home, deancrowtheatre.com.
Frances Browner is a writer and teacher of creative writing. Her debut novel, A Bronx Summer, has just been published and it has had launches in Greystones, where she now lives, in Limerick, where her father hails from, and Offaly, as her mother came from Forbann. And Frances has many connections still with the faithful county. The launch night in Burr Library was a great success and she told me all about it.
So it was wonderful. It was hosted by James Scully, who's a historian from Ballagher. And Honor Ridgway is the librarian there. She very kindly gave us a beautiful venue. And I thank Offaly Libraries also. And I had four musicians from the Brewery Tap in Tullamore, Dominic Madden, Pat Shortall, Robbie Spain, and Joe Coyne. So our theme was emigration. because my book, A Bronx Summer, is about a girl emigrating to America in the mid-80s.
And this is the 1980s, not the 1880s.
Oh, yeah, the 1980s. Yeah.
So a very different and maybe underrepresented time in the story of Irish emigrants in literature,
yeah,
at least.
I think so. I that's what I felt all along. You know, we haven't really written about this time because it was very significant. I believe in 1986, 56,000 Irish people emigrated to America. So, and they were all relatively young, I'd say between 18 and 24. And they probably were more better educated than their counterparts in the 50s, but they were still doing the same kind of jobs when they got there, you know. And but a great sense of camaraderie, I have to say. Wonderful connections were made. And of course, one of the big issues at that time too was being illegal, not having visas. So a lot of people worked, you know, illegally, but it was kind of acceptable until 9/11. 9/11 changed everything then.
Yeah, for everything.
It became more difficult, you know, to get in and out. But I was there. Yes, I was. I was older, kind of, when I went. I was in my late 20s, and I did have a visa. That the later visa, there was the Donnelly visa and then the Morrison visa. They were the two main ones that came out, kind of, late 80s, early 90s. But yeah, I went. There was four girls from Dublin, and they called us the Dublin girls because there were very few Dublin people there. But yes, it was fantastic. We all worked as waitresses and had a great time in Manhattan. And
stored away ideas for novels to be written years later.
Well, you know, it's funny. I always kind of liked, you know, writing, as in letters and compositions in school. And I'd write little poems for people on their birthday cards and things like that. And the amount of times people would have said, oh, you have to write a book, you have to write a book. But I didn't actually start writing until, I think it was 94. I was living out in Montauk in Long Island, and I took a class in a high school in East Hampton. And that's where I started writing all the little bits and pieces. Got my very first piece published in the East Hampton Star, and it was called The American Parcels. And that was about my grand-aunt who sent us these lovely parcels when we were younger. So I got a few things published then, and came back into the city, as they call it on Long Island. Came back in New York City, they'd say out on the island. So when you're out on the island, they say into the city. So I came back into the city, yeah. And I did a master's in English literature and creative writing. That was really interesting. And after 9/11, again, going back to that, I felt I wanted to do something to give back, but I couldn't think of anything to do. So I volunteered at a local Irish centre on McLean Avenue, the Aisling Irish Centre. And I ended up giving creative writing classes to the seniors, senior citizens.
Okay.
And who were mainly Irish. And they all, I remember one day giving them the prompt, I remember. And most of them remembered their childhoods in Ireland, even though they'd been in America 50 years. And one woman wrote about the boat, and then they all started talking about the boat. So I said, okay, next week we'll write about the boat. And it went on and from there. And one day I said to the director, gosh, we have to publish these because they're just, these stories were amazing, you know? I mean, like a social history.
Yeah.
So we did, we published it in a book, which came out in 2006. It was 32 stories of Irish between 1929 and 69. They'd emigrated, and all in their own words. So that was fabulous. So that was kind of gave me ideas then, you know, for stories, I guess, and start writing my own stories. And so I came home then in 2006 and start working here and publishing, got a few things published here, short stories.
Collections of poetry.
Yes, I brought out a collection of poetry in 2019, Roots and Wings. So in 2016, I had brought out a collection of short stories and memoir, You Could Have Been Someone. So it's some are fiction and some are memoir. I've had a few things broadcast on Sunday Miscellany and Living Word and different things like that. So, yeah, so then I went for the novel. Big step.
Big step. Tell us the story of a Bronx summer. You've kind of laid the foundations of it there for us, the 1980s.
Yeah.
The rural Irish.
Yes. My character now, she's younger. She's about 22. Because again, as I say, I was fascinated by the young people who had gone over and made their way. And she's a young girl who leaves. She kind of grew up in County Dublin, Wicklow area. And when I was writing it first, and especially in America, when I would write any of the stories, a lot of the criticism I got was they were too good to be true. There was too much happiness. You know, you have to bring a bit of conflict in, I kept being told.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was the hard part for me, you know, because I loved it from the day I landed. I absolutely loved it, you know, and I stayed 20 years. And I absolutely loved New York. So I had to find it really hard to, you know. And when I was working with the editor, she kept saying, increase the tension, increase the tension. I'm like, oh my God, if I increase it anymore, it'll be like, you know, no, everybody would be saying, why doesn't she just leave, you know, or whatever.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
So that was an interesting challenge for me, you know, to increase the tension.
Yeah, and what was that like as a creative writing teacher? To be the student in a way.
Yeah, it was great. I loved it. Yeah, because it put myself in their shoes. And you know, but I always say, because I'm always saying to them, you should write every day. You know, and then in the last 2 years, I've been learning the ukulele, and the ukulele teacher tells us to practice every day, and then I'm thinking, oh, now I know how my writing students feel like. If they feel guilty if they don't practice every day.
Yeah.
But writing is the same. It's a muscle that you have to, keep you know, using it until you get better and better, you know. So it was great being the student. I loved it.
Yeah. We're in the month of December now, and there are bells jingling around the place, and lots of people are looking for ideas for stocking fillers. Why would a Bronx summer be ideal in somebody's stocking this Christmas?
Well, the reviews I'm getting so far are an easy read. Lots of people love the setting. One woman told me she'd never been to New York and now she feels she has been there. Another one of my neighbours, the German lady, told me, I've spent the afternoon in the Bronx. So a lot of people are talking about the place, that my sense of place is very vivid, that they all felt they were there.
Okay.
And I think most people like New York, you know?
Oh, they do, of course.
And yeah, so I think to bring them, I was really pleased that I had been able to bring them into a particular place, particular time. And I'm happy with the feedback, you know?
There you go. That's the author, Frances Browner, happy with the feedback for her novel, A Bronx Summer. That is it from Encore for this week. It's great Joe Cooney is in the building. He'll be here after the news at 8 o'clock. I'm at encore@midlands103.com. Drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. Until next Thursday, same bad time, same bad channel. Take care of yourself. Good night.
Midlands 183, thanks to the Dean Crow Theatre and Arts Centre Athlone, with a wide range of flexible spaces, expertise and facilities to make your live stage production, corporate event or community function a success. Your theatre, our home. DeanCrowTheatre.com.